Is South Dakota pinching pennies or are they flushing dollars? You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It is Wednesday. It's January 7th. Now, there is a scene in the comedy classic Christmas Vacation where a business leader's wife takes him to task for cutting the employee Christmas bonus.
Remember how I was toying with the notion of suspending the Christmas bonuses?
You didn't. Well, of all the cheap, lousy ways to save a buck.
Now, the boss decides not to eliminate the bonus altogether, but to rethink it. So here is Clark Griswold, played by Chevy Chase, and he is opening his Christmas bonus letter in front of his wife, played by Beverly D'Angelo, and members of his family, including his brother-in-law, played by Randy Quaid.
What is it?
It's a one-year membership in the Jelly of the Month Club.
Oh, God.
Clark, that's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
That it is, Edward. That it is indeed.
I'm sorry, Clark.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got.
Okay, with that classic movie memory in mind, let's talk about Governor Larry Roden's proposed budget. Because, according to Seth Tupper, schools, state employees, and community health care providers might be feeling a little Griswoldian frustration right about now. He wrote commentary for South Dakota Searchlight. The piece is called A New Year's Resolution for South Dakota: Stop Flushing Dollars, Then Pinching Pennies. You can find it at southdakotasearchlight.com. But for today's Dakota Political Junkies conversation, Seth Tupper, editor of South Dakota Searchlight, and journalist Kevin Wooster stopped into STPB's studios in the Black Hills to talk about the governor's budget.
Yeah, this is a commentary I published recently, and it was kind of just a lot of thoughts stewing around in my head that came to a head during the governor's budget address in December when he recommended a flat funding for schools, state employees, and healthcare providers, no increase for them in his recommended budget. That was interesting to me because as we've covered the legislative session over the last few years of our existence at South Dakota Searchlight, it started in 2023, that session, the legislature and then Governor Noem decided to reduce the sales tax temporarily from 4.5% to 4.2% through 2027. That cost state government more than $100 million in revenue. So we had enough money apparently at the time that the legislators and the governor at the time said, we don't need $100 million. And they got rid of it. Fast forward a little bit more. Listeners may have heard a lot about, you know, the prison that's going to be built in Sioux Falls, the new men's prison. Before legislators and the current governor settled on that, they had a different site in rural Lincoln County that the Noem administration at the time really pursued hard and as we've detailed, spent $20 million developing before they had to switch because of litigation and other opposition to the site. They switched to a different site in Sioux Falls and left behind $20 million in unrecoverable expenses back at the rural Lincoln County site. So apparently at that time, we had enough money that we could waste $20 million on a prison site that'll never have a prison. And more recently, we've done some reporting about all the economic development aid that's going to C.J. Schwann's, which is a project to build a frozen food plant in northern Sioux Falls. And, you know, you can debate that, but, you know, we totaled up all the aid. It totals up to $69 million in state loans, grants, and tax rebates. And so, of course, there are some people wondering if perhaps we could have gotten off a little cheaper with those incentives. And so when you add all that up and then you come to the budget address and you hear the governor say, we just don't have any extra money for schools this year, it is a little bit hard to swallow given, you know, the path that got us here with revenue that the state said it didn't need, with money that wasted on a prison proposal, and with having enough money to spend $69 million, recruiting a frozen food plant to Sioux Falls. So that's kind of the stuff that was rolling around in my head.
One of the things I think is important about this piece is it gets to this idea that the narrative is taking shape often that, you know, COVID money is done and now it's time to go back to normal, quote unquote normal. And some of this, you know, the flatness and the difficult decisions are just business as usual for South Dakota. But I think you point out very specifically in your commentary the ways that now you're arguing some of this money is even being, in your words, squandered, and to look more deeply at some of those decisions. Kevin, what does this bring up for you, especially the sales tax reduction? And, you know, that was part of this broader conversation about property tax complaints, sales tax, was a third option at the time. Now I'm forgetting.
Was that before yesterday?
Yeah. So, but, Kevin Wooster, what does this all bring up for you when you look at revenue and how some of these decisions recently have been made?
Well, first, it brings up when Seth has a few things rolling around in his head, he comes up with kind of this comprehensive tie together, all these, you know, pertinent facts from the legislature and from budgets. When I have a few things rolling around in my head, I come up with a poem about frogs. So I don't know how it rolls that way in his head and comes out like that, because it doesn't work for me. But it's an excellent piece, and anybody that hasn't read it on Searchlight should, because it makes this point, and it makes you think as you're watching him delineate these areas where we didn't make the best budgeting decisions and cost a lot of money in a state where we like to slam the federal government for all their, you know, failures to manage well. We're done a scaled-down version. That's kind of what was going on here. And then it's sad, as he points out, the timing at the, you know, at the Christmas coming on when the announcement was made. It made me almost think that Governor Roden, who sometimes back was willing to say he made a mistake, said something stupid about Special Olympics, which he didn't mean, obviously, in any negative way, this would have been maybe a time to say, you know, that whole no growth in these pretty important areas of our budget, maybe that was a dumb idea. And maybe that'll turn out to be that way in the legislature. It isn't just now. If you go back to the legislature through time, well, they're pretty good about managing money, mostly because they have to be. You know, they can't spend in the red. They're like anybody else at any level of government. And it seems like there was a sequence here that Seth outlines pretty well that was really apparent and in some ways egregious.
Yeah. Seth, they have a line in here about a property tax or a sales tax cut that nobody asked for. And it was the grocery tax and the property tax and the sales tax. They were all being discussed at the same time. Grocery tax, you know, did not gain the popularity that it needed to gain to get over the line. Property tax is really going to be a big issue in 2026 legislative session. But to your point, the people of South Dakota weren't calling and saying, reduce our sales tax or extend the sunset for a sales tax reduction, reduce revenue in that way. That wasn't the problem they were asking to be solved. Do I understand your thought process there correctly, or am I changing?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it, and that was the third thing you were trying to remember before, that we couldn't remember because it was before yesterday. But, you know, my memory of that, and I've written about this before too, was that if you recall back in 2022, Governor Noem was in a race for reelection against the Democratic nominee Jamie Smith. For about a minute there, I think she thought that she might have some actual competition, she came out and surprised everybody by declaring that she was for repealing the sales tax just on groceries, which had always been a Democratic position that hardly any Republicans had ever supported.
Right.
And that set in motion a chain of events where the legislature did a lot of hand-wringing about, okay, we got a lot of property tax complaints, we got Governor Noem trying to repeal the sales tax on groceries, and somehow they threw that all in a blender and came out with, let's just reduce the sales tax from 4.5% to 4.2%, and which was, again, you know, over $100 million in revenue that cost the state, which looked okay back then because we had billions of dollars in federal COVID relief and stimulus aid flowing into the state, and we were you know, running huge surpluses, and it looked like we could afford to get rid of that revenue. But I think there's a lot of legislators now that are looking back and probably regretting that.
Yeah.
Remember how smart we were when we, as a budgeting state, when we had all that federal money piling in?
Decisions were a lot easier.
Oh. Man, can we budget? We're something else.
Let me go back to, we're so fiscally responsible. I want to go back to what you mentioned, too, about the Economic Development in the Future Fund, Seth, and I was looking through the reporting on South Dakota Searchlight about C.J. Schwann's, this company project, the $69 million that you've added up on your site. Tell us a little bit about that, because it's controversial for a couple reasons, including the involvement of some individuals in state government in the development of it, but also just the amount of incentives. Help us understand what you're looking for, how the Future Fund works, how economic development works in the state, and where some of the red flags are that you believe.
Yeah, credit to Joshua Heyer, who did that reporting, but it was kind of instigated by the fact that, economic development is really becoming an issue in the governor's race. We've got at least a couple of candidates who have taken a lot of issue with how we do economic development in the state and are pushing that. We're coming out of a big debate over a carbon pipeline that was a big political divide in the Republican Party, which was kind of an economic development debate. And so anyway, it started with the fact that we got a tip that former Governor Noem's former Commissioner of Economic Development, Steve Westra, is working for C.J. Schwann's in Sioux Falls. That's significant because when he was the Commissioner of Economic Development in 2021, he signed the first pledge to give state aid to C.J. Schwann's to build a frozen food plant in northern Sioux Falls. And then in 2023, he left state government. In 2024, he took a job for C.J. Schwann's, working for C.J. Schwann's. And then today, we're in a situation where the total state aid to the company is $69 million for a $550 million project. So the levels there is obviously there are some people questioning, did we need to provide that amount of aid or would some amount of lesser aid been appropriate? And then the other aspect is questions about conflicts of interest, given that you have somebody who went from state government to working for a company that received a lot of state aid and that he was involved in directing some of that state aid to the company before he went to work for him. And then there's another character in that story, Jeff Erickson, who is both on the State Board of Economic Development, which approved some of this aid for C.J. Schwann's, and is also a member of the C.J. Schwann's corporate board, and is also involved in a corporation that rents office space to C.J. Schwann's in downtown Sioux Falls while they're building their factory north of town. So there's a lot of connections there between state government and this company that's getting all of that aid. And the Future Fund component is, I'd have to go back and look at the story. I think about half of the money that we're talking about came from the Future Fund, which is a fund that was created during the Mickelson administration. That's a tax on employers, and it basically creates this pot of money that the governor can do essentially whatever they want with. There's a one-sentence state law that says it has to be spent on economic development or something like that. The governor has exclusive control over that, and that's another thing that some legislators, it's been an issue for a long time. Mm-hmm. Perennially, there's legislators that want to do something to rein in the Future Fund a little bit and get more oversight and control over it. They haven't ever really done it. Yeah.
Kevin, we're going way back before yesterday. We're going back to 1987 and Governor Mickelson. Do you have a historical sense of how long the Future Fund has been an area of disgruntlement for legislators?
It started out, I mean, there were some people opposed it at the time, but, because you're taking money away from businesses and people didn't like that. But in general, you know, Mickelson was popular when they came up with that and the idea behind it. And it was, I think, overall pretty well supported. And the idea of giving the governor a lot of latitude at the time seemed to make sense. And I think that was a time when there was more trust in the governors by the legislature. Mm. It seemed like there was also a lot more clarity among legislators on what was happening and how that money was going to be spent. And then I think over the years it got spent in ways that more and more troubled legislators. And there wasn't as much transparency as they thought there might be in it. Mm. And that's kind of what led to some of the conflicts we've had. Certainly didn't just start.
Right.
I think one of the recent triggers was Governor Noem using Future Fund money for the Freedom Works Here workforce development campaign that she starred in, which some legislators viewed as being as much maybe as of a political messaging as it was workforce messaging.
Which seemed to stray far from the original intent. It did stray far from the original intent.
And in retrospect, there one of the accusations at that time was that she was putting herself out in the public eye, often on the Freedom Works Here campaign, in the hopes people accused her of national leadership role, which of course has happened. People had their eye on where she had her eye, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to deny that that was part of it. Now, she can also say that she was doing a good job as governor of promoting this and bringing people to South Dakota and developing that. But
let's talk about that for the Schwann's project, too. This is a 600 jobs, $75 million in awards to local contractors. I'm quoting from your story or Josh's story on Searchlight here. So, Seth, when you look at how economic development works, there needs to be an investment to bring in this kind of project. They can go anywhere. If we don't show up with this kind of incentives, maybe places don't come here, and this is how the economy grows. So how do you look at the projects like this and say, we're weighing the positives, we're weighing the people who are upset about the process, and we're coming up with what? I mean, how do you evaluate that?
Yeah, the tough part of always in evaluating that is on the economic development side, you'll hear an argument that, well, if we wouldn't have given them all this aid, they wouldn't have come here. They would have chosen a different state. Mm-hmm. And we can't ever really know that. You know, we can't ever really go back in time. We can't ever really know if it would have been $50 million in aid instead of $69 million or $40 million or $30 million. It's really hard to say anything objective about that, but I think our role and what we're trying to do with this story is just bring some transparency to it and let the legislators and whoever have the debate, which is this an appropriate amount? And are there concerns about this amount of money going to a company that has people that are both that have been on both sides, the state side and the company side, to bring that out and let people discuss it? And different people come to different conclusions. And we've heard a lot of feedback from people that, you know, thought that we're unnecessarily beating up on this project, and we've heard from other people who thought that, you know, hey, thank you so much for shedding some light on this. So I think it's just one of those debates that I don't know. It's hard to be objectively say how much is too much,
right?
But kind of like, you know, when you see it, right?
Yeah. To that point in your piece, that debate is showing up in the state political arena. John Hansen has called it crony capitalism, corporate welfare, an unaccountable slush fund. That's from your story. Dan Ahlers with the Democrats has talked about Westra's golden parachute and said the money should be used to support small businesses and entrepreneurship. And we've certainly heard that complaint in South Dakota before, that there is not enough investment in small business and, you know, kind of grassroots ground up of, you know, homegrown businesses, but $69 million might go to this international company to come and build something big. So that's all outlined in the story too. I think it's a great piece with lots to think about in it.
Yeah, and it's a reminder the importance of having journalists that are still around looking at these things to present this to the public and have them decide what they think it is. You know, and also the Schwann's guy, it just to bring that company up and how far they've come from what the 1950s and Marv Schwann selling ice cream bars over in Marshall, Minnesota. Now, of course, it's owned by a South Korean conglomerate.
They're making mandu.
Yeah.
Or dumplings, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Schwann's man and the trucks are gone. You know, that's how I fed my kids a lot of times during the legislative sessions. Wait for the Schwann's man to pull up in the alley. Go get the pizzas and tater tots.
And the mint chip cones.
Good company.
Yeah.
But did it need $69 million or could they have negotiated $39 million? Did they negotiate? Did Schwann start out wanting $110 million?
Which further complicates the connection between Westra and state government and the company. Yeah. At least in the public eye, in the scrutiny, it raises eyebrows and questions. I want to, before we let you go back to, you know, here we are in the new year, our first Dakota Political Junkies conversation for the new year of many, a quick recap of some of the top stories that you thought drew all our attention in 2025. Oh, it seems so long ago now, 2025. And then looking ahead to 2026, Seth, what do you remember and what do you predict?
Well, when I look back at 2025, two things really jump out. One was obviously the departure of a governor and the elevation of another in the middle of the old governor's term, which is something that doesn't happen very often. And, you know, the way that propelled Governor Roden into a competitive position in this year's primary race was kind of incredible. I don't know that anybody was thinking of Larry Roden as potentially, you know, the next governor after Kristi Noem. And he got a tremendous boost by being, you know, elevated to governor in the middle of her term and having the advantages of incumbency now. The other thing is, when I think about 2025, we talked about this a lot at Searchlight and among my staff, is prisons, property taxes, and a pipeline. The three P's were the big issues. You know, the pipeline issue was kind of settled maybe when the legislature in March passed and Governor Roden signed a bill banning eminent domain for pipelines. The prison thing we've talked about, you know, the legislature finally made a decision to build a $650 million men's prison in Sioux Falls. And they did pass a property tax bill last year. It seems like everybody's forgotten about that because now everybody wants to pass more bills and do more to reduce property taxes. But they did pass a bill in the 2025 session that's supposed to slow property tax growth. Mm-hmm. Which
I had forgotten that, too. You're right. I had forgotten that until you said it just now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, this is maybe a quirky one, but I think that the fact that a level of sanity has been restored to the Capitol, primarily by Larry Roden. I mean, this governor hasn't been kicked off of every Native American reservation in the state or banned from it.
What an achievement.
quite an achievement, you know, based on the standards set by the previous governor. He's not on Fox News every night. He's not running down to the studio. He dresses like a normal South Dakota Western rancher welder. He's had to up that a little bit because, in my opinion, he had a little trouble looking gubernatorial immediately, but I think he's coming along in that regard. I don't know if Sandy's getting some new clothes on him, but he's always looked a little uncomfortable in some of those dress clothes. But, you know, he shows up and works. He works hard. You can argue whether or not he's doing the right thing always or whether or not he should make a different decision, but I am just so relieved as somebody that's covered the Capitol and covered politics and government in this state since the 70s to return to some level of normalcy. I mean, it's refreshing. And
I want to add this to the we got this email from a listener asking, what do the South Dakota politicos think about the job Noem is doing? Is their silence the same as exhibited by the South Dakota Republican Party? And I thought you two would be an interesting person to people to pose that question to, because it's been 1 year since Governor Noem said, well, since we turned over to a new governor, are South Dakota politicians talking about the job that she's doing? If not, what does their silence mean?
Go ahead, Kevin.
I haven't talked to, well, I've talked to a couple that aren't big fans and, you know, would criticize her for the show that she puts on. And I haven't heard a lot of it. I think there's a certain degree of relief, maybe, for the same reason because Roden gets along better with a lot of legislators, too. What I'm struck by, and people bring it up to me, people from other states, is I've just been struck by the degree of cruelty that she shows towards human beings, and it just makes me sad as a South Dakotan that's, you know, it's very exciting that we have somebody in an administration in a cabinet level position in an important job, and.
Do you mean in the language that she uses, or do you mean in the policies?
The way she talks about people. Mm-hmm. If anybody that would sit in front of a horrible prison in another country wearing, $25,000, $50,000, $40,000 watch, whatever it was, and, you know, mugging for the camera, and these people behind them, what other kind of people they are, doesn't matter. They're people, human beings. And just some of the crass language she uses on her social media, the way she refers to people with the terms and things. I know that I never would have imagined this when I used to stick up for her to people when she was in Congress. And now I guess, because I thought she was a pretty good member of Congress, and I thought maybe she was going places in the House and eventually to the Senate. And I guess from reading her books, I haven't read her books, but Seth tells me that she says in there somewhere that that wasn't who she was when she was trying to be somebody else, and now she's being who she was.
Yeah.
Well, please, go back to who you were pretending to be. You were a much better person then.
Seth, do you have thoughts on who in South Dakota in politics is talking about Noam, who is not talking about her, and what that means, if anything?
Besides me talking about her.
You know, what's been interesting to me is really sort of the out-of-sight, out-of-mind factor. If you recall, Governor Noam didn't have that much, a lot of luck with the legislature. You know, we referenced earlier, she tried to convince the legislature to repeal the sales tax on groceries, and they rejected that. It didn't even make it out of committee. She went to a committee to testify, and they just flat out rejected it. She didn't have a great relationship with the legislature, and you really don't hear much about her at all when you're covering the legislative session. I think there's a lot of, I think Kevin used the word relief. I think there is a lot of relief. Not that, I mean, there were plenty of legislators who agreed with her on policy things and things, you know, in the Republican Party especially, but I think there is a sense of relief that, you know, she's not out there, that we don't have a governor anymore that's out there stirring things up on social media, a new outrage, a new controversy every day that then the legislators have to answer for or that kind of thing. So, our coverage of Governor Noam and her new role has been limited to what's been the impact on South Dakota. We've had some stories, you know, here in Rapid City, there was a School of Mines student, quite famously kind of locally, who Department of Homeland Security tried to deport because she had a 4 or 5 year old misdemeanor traffic violation on her record. We did a story about a dairy farm close to Noam's farm in near Castlewood in the eastern part of the state, where they lost a whole bunch of their workforce to an immigration enforcement action. And that's been the questions we've tried to raise is, you know, is she and the Department of Homeland Security going after the right people when they're going after people they're trying to deport, or are they casting too wide of a net? And those are the kind of questions I guess we've tried to ask about it.
Yeah. Let's end with a prediction for 2026. What do you think some of the top stories and state politics might be, Kevin?
Well, you can't get by the primary.
Right.
The GOP primary is going to be a free-for-all, and whether or not anybody can talk Billy Sutton into running for something as a Democrat or an independent, which seems unlikely. And beyond that, Seth talks about, I assume the issues that you, the big three, are going to continue to be issues, right?
Yeah, to me, the governor's race, I think, is the biggest story of the year, and specifically the primary. Yeah. I think, again, if you would have said to somebody, you know, 5 years ago that you know, we'd get to today and Dusty Johnson would be in a dead heat with Larry Roden for the Republican nomination for governor, they'd have said you're crazy, that Dusty Johnson would be running away with it. But we've had two polls that show them basically statistically even, and this can be a heck of a race. And if the other, you know, two candidates, Toby Doden and John Hanson, climbing in the last poll, if somebody can beat Dusty Johnson, or if he loses in that primary, that's going to be one of the more remarkable political stories we've had in a long time in South Dakota. So I think that's the big political story of the year in our state.
And you have to imagine that Johnson has a phenomenal get out the vote plan right now for that primary, because if the turnout is low, that's going to be a free for all.
What about down ticket? These lawmakers, you see Gene Hunhoff coming back. Will there be others who come back and say, you know, I was out last time, but I'm not giving up. I'm coming back for the Senate and House seats. What are you anticipating?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And, you know, 2 years ago, the pipeline, the fracture over the the carbon pipeline proposal caused 14 Republican legislative incumbents to lose their seats, or it was a big factor in that. And we have noticed, and we hope to examine that as the year goes on, we get closer to the election, that there are a lot. I don't have the number on me, but I've noticed there are a lot of those legislators who lost who are now trying to come back and reclaim their seats, possibly on the theory that this will be a greater turnout with the governor primary and a U.S. House primary, and even the Democrats look like they have a primary on the U.S. House side. And so I think they're anticipating a bigger turnout and thinking maybe they can win those seats back. And I think that'll be a major story in the legislature.
And will Lee Schoenbeck try to make a comeback? Or is he done for good?
I don't know. To be done for now, but I don't know. Wouldn't try to predict Lee.
Some things you can predict, some things you can't. Some things are predictably unpredictable. Give us a call. Send in your questions. Gentlemen, thank you so much. It is always a delight.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
You can find Seth Tupper's commentary at SouthDakotaSearchlight.com. And if you have a question for our Dakota political junkies, send me an email, inthemoment@sdpb.org. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.